This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an innovative concert experience, a rarely performed stage drama, or a marathon celebration honoring a Baroque composer, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. A new and innovative arts experience at the Contemporary Arts Center aims to excite your senses. Goat in the Road Productions, in collaboration with acclaimed New Orleans musician Aurora Nealon, present the world premiere of her solo album, Kind Humankind, in a multidimensional stage show. Aurora Nealon is here with Goat in the Road's co-director, Chris Kamenstein. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks so much for having us.
Aurora, let's begin with your journey as a musician. We know you as a vocalist and a multi-instrumentalist, playing saxophones and accordion with several local bands, including your own traditional jazz band. How did you land in New Orleans?
I first landed in New Orleans in 2004. I had taken a bicycle trip across the country, and I had one very dear friend who was living down here, a beautiful singer, Sarah Lucas. I was quite young, just out of college and out of a theater training program in Paris, and Sarah was down here in New Orleans, and she was really loving it and enjoying it, and so I moved down here to be with Sarah. She moved away about 2 months after I moved here, but I stuck around.
And home is where?
Generally, Northern California and Colorado is where I come from.
And your latest project is a theatrical exploration of your solo CD, Kind Humankind. What are you exploring in the music, and how are you and Chris expanding its vision?
Kind Humankind was sort of written over a period of about 4 years. So there's a lot of different thematic material in it, addressing ideas of life, death, and our own personal bureaucracy that we sift through in ourselves. That was a real pleasure and kind of an internal experience to record that. I recorded that all by myself. So every sound that you hear on the album, every instrument you hear on the album is me. Then I later had the opportunity to expand that and work with Goat on the Road and Chris Kamenstein and Sheridan Flaherty, who have been friends for a long time, and I've admired their artistic journey as a theater company. And so I got the opportunity through the CAC to expand the work into a stage production.
And Chris, how are you bringing these songs to life?
We're using the space in the CAC, the warehouse space, in some unique ways. And one of the ways, I won't ruin anything for anyone, but one of the ways we're trying to do it is really enjoy the way that musicians can move through space. Most of the time when we see concerts, we're seeing musicians in one place on a stage. And those are a beautiful way to watch music. For this, we were interested in how do we move musicians through space and how do we kind of choreograph them into different positions that give you a different sense of each song. So each song has a visual element to it. And some of that is sort of metaphorical, a feeling or a sense or some kind of lighting that happens. Some of it is based in projection, and some of it is really specific, giving a very specific theatrical image that the musicians play inside of.
Very cool.
Yeah. Story-wise, I think it's a little bit similar that we're not wanting to tell people exactly what the stories are. We want to leave it to the audience's imagination to sort of interpret for themselves. That's sometimes the beauty of music and song or poetics. I know for me there's some very distinct personal stories that go with each song, but as I was writing the song, I wasn't trying to address it exactly to convey verbatim that story to people.
One of the things I really love about Aurora as a lyricist and a musician is that the work is dense in the best way. It feels like it's both something incredibly personal and also open to interpretation for other people.
I think something that has been exciting in working with Goat on the Road and working with these designers and these three other performers is that I have seen new depth in these songs and in this collection of songs that I didn't have before. And so it's been really deepening to the work to expand it kind of multidimensionally into visualization and these threads of connection that are networking between the songs now.
Who else will be performing in concert with you?
Great question. We have three other amazing performers: Alexis Marceau, who hails from Sweet Crude and a number of other projects; Tiff Lamson, who is out of Lafayette but has lived in New Orleans a long time and is most well known for her band Givers; and then Free For All, who's an amazing performer I've known since I was in college in Oberlin, an incredible string player and vocalist who is working on a piece of their own called Sing River Shout and played with Layla McCalla for a while. So the three of them will be joining myself.
And what would you say will be the takeaway from this unique experience?
There's a particular way we ingest music in New Orleans. It's an amazing way to ingest music. And I think this project is just offering a different path, a different option. How do we make music visual, and how do we bring it to life in a way that can offer audiences something that lights up a different part of the brain?
Yeah, I would agree. I hope that this can be continued to be supported here in New Orleans, this kind of different way of presenting music.
And the CAC has been amazing in supporting this project. Ultimately, I hope people come and see it and really leave kind of stunned in the best way possible.
Vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Aurora Nealon and Goat in the Road co-director Chris Kamenstein, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks so much for having us.
Aurora Nealon and Goat in the Road present Kind Humankind, a theatrical concert experience at the Contemporary Arts Center, 900 Camp Street. Performances run Friday, March 29th through Sunday, March 31st. The 33rd Annual Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival gets underway this week. One theater offering, Tennessee Williams' Baby Doll, a stage adaptation of the playwright's 1956 screenplay, is making a regional debut at Le Petit Theater. Director Max Williams is here with actor Paul Whitty. Welcome.
Hello, Diane. So great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
This one-act play caused quite a stir back in the day as a film before it was adapted for the stage. It was even condemned in some circles. What was all the buzz about?
Well, you know, Tennessee is getting into some pretty dark and wild stuff with this play. It came out at a time when I sort of jokingly have referred to it among the company as the beginnings of Tennessee's kind of weird period. But really what the issue was at the time the movie came out, there's a famous scene that happens in the movie between Carol Baker, who plays Baby Doll, and Eli Wallach in his screen debut, who plays Silva Vaccaro. And he is attempting to seduce her on a porch swing. And Ilya Kazan directed the movie, and he shot the whole scene in medium close-ups and close-ups. And one of the things that was strenuously objected to was that you didn't know where Eli Wallach's hands were. Which says something kind of interesting about the power of human imagination, yeah. So that was particularly singled out for condemnation as being too risque. But also, you know, it's a subversive story, especially for its time, and it deals with issues of psychological regression and, frankly, sexual infantilization. And there is a sadistic streak to some of the characters. And I think, you know, for the day, it was a lot.
Now, it's a work that's not often seen, Max. Was it a success for Tennessee, or was it affected by the controversy of its day?
The movie didn't enjoy a huge wide release at the time. It was certainly not a failure. I think it sort of increased Tennessee's rep as a bad boy, you know, in terms of his writings about sex, South, and sin and like that. But it has since enjoyed a real cult following. And actually, the play that we're doing is a fairly recent adaptation of the screenplay. It only debuted in 2015. But Tennessee had written the screenplay based on several one-acts and stories that he had written prior to that, notably his play 27 Wagons Full of Cotton. And, you know, Tennessee is a writer who kind of keeps coming back to the same characters again and again, poking at them from different angles, trying to reveal different things about them. Our script is culled from the screenplay and some from 27 Wagons Full of Cotton and some are from a play called Tiger Tail that Tennessee Williams wrote in the late 1970s based on his screenplay for Baby Doll. All the dialogue is Tennessee Williams. Most of the stage directions are Tennessee Williams. But there's something about it, too, that feels, I think, fresh and contemporary in its way.
Now, Baby Doll is set in the 1950s in the Mississippi Delta. What is the storyline?
Well, the premise of Baby Doll is that there's a cotton gin owner named Archie Lee Meagan, played by Paul here, and he is married to a young woman about to turn 20 years old. They call Baby Doll. And as part of their marriage arrangement, Archie Lee agreed to wait until she was ready to consummate the marriage. But there's been a timeline, a clock ticking on that. And the clock is about to, you know, the alarm clock's about to go off later that night in the course of the play. So he's very eager to consummate this relationship that is now a marriage that's 2 years old. Meanwhile, his cotton gin has been shut down because of the opening of the syndicate plantation cotton gin across the way, who kind of took all his business. And he's resentful about that and, in fact, is losing his furniture and, you know, seeing his relationship, which is already kind of on shaky ground, you know, be affected by all of that. So he decides it's going to be a good idea to we think, burn down the Syndicate plantation cotton gin and get all the business that they were having. So the next day, the foreman of the Syndicate plantation gin shows up at Archie Lee's. Archie Lee's all ready to gin out that cotton. Silva Vaccaro, who's the foreman of the Syndicate plantation, sends him kind of on a wild goose chase to get him out of the way so that he can gain proof that Archie Lee burned down the cotton gin. And he does that through the seduction of Archie Lee's wife, Baby Doll.
And Paul, you are Archie Lee.
Yes.
How do you bring him to life?
I'm telling you, this has been a very tough character to live with on a daily basis. He's a very desperate man. He kind of wallows in that desperation. But you have to, I think, with any character, even if it's someone like Archie Lee who's abusive, racist, you have to find the sympathetic side of that person. You have to find the positive intent in that person. And so you approach him from there first. Like, what does he want and how is he trying to get that? Without judging him as a bad person right off the bat, even though he does bad things. You have to approach it with that sort of fair judgment at first.
Is there something you can share with us from the production that gives us a little insight into his character?
Sure. You know, this play is set in the 50s, but I think it has a lot of relevance today. There's a note of sort of working class entitlement or a feeling of being overlooked, specifically with regards to being a white man. And this is where, like, his racism comes into play. His fear of Silva as an immigrant, as a sexual challenger in the room. And later in the play, he sort of speaks to this entitlement and sort of alludes to his connections to white supremacy or those sorts of things without outright saying them. But there's a point in the play where he kind of explodes on Baby Doll and he says, yeah, some little innocent baby doll of a wife, not ready for marriage. Oh, no, not yet ready for marriage, but plenty ready to. Oh, I see how it's funny. I can see the funny side of it. Oh, yeah, it sure is comic. Comic as hell, but there's one little teensy, teensy little thing you overlooked. I got position here in this county where I was born and brought up. I got position. I hold a respected, lifelong member of the on my side of friends, long-standing business associates and social. See what I mean? You ain't got that advantage, have you, mister? Huh? Mister? And then he goes on to say some pretty terribly racist things after that, which I won't say on the air.
He's a pretty complicated character.
He's very complicated. Archie is just very much the animal trapped in the corner who's using violence in order to get out of his predicament.
I don't really think we anticipated that, well, I certainly didn't when I chose the play, that it would have a lot to speak to about today and some extremely troubling, terrible things that are going on today. And so I don't know if that's that Tennessee is a visionary or if that we are still, as humans, dealing with the same darn issues still after all these decades. Maybe it's a combination of both.
Tennessee puts violence and racism and seduction and all those things in very literal terms on stage and forces a live audience to be witness to those things. You know, and we are engaging in these things feet away from a live audience, so they are forced to become a party to that. I'm sure there's a slight discomfort in that, but that's part of the enjoyment of going to see live theater, I think.
Director Max Williams and actor Paul Whitty, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much, Diane. A pleasure.
Tennessee Williams' Baby Doll continues its run at Le Petit Theater, 616 St. Peter Street, through March 31st. A full listing of festival events can be found online at TennesseeWilliams.net. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The 21st annual Bach Around the Clock Music and Dance Festival kicks off Uptown, the 29-hour marathon celebration honoring the 334th birthday of composer Johann Sebastian Bach, finds some 300 artists gathering for performances. Festival co-founders Albinus and Manon Prisgintis are here. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to be here.
You know, it looks like your baby is all grown up. 21 years?
Yes. Actually, we also have two grandchildren, so I wasn't sure which one you meant.
The musical one, of course.
Thank you.
And recently the subject of a documentary film, The Heart is an Organ. What's it like seeing your life's work in the arts come alive on the big screen?
It was great. Because it's at the Britannia and it was at a film festival. It was amazing. We felt like, you know, Hollywood. A wonderful movie directed by David White with three themes. The organ itself, our great love affair, which I thought was maybe a little lengthy. And the other was a little background on a Trinity Artist series and Bach Around a Clock.
May I add that this year, for the first time, the church is opening the door at 6 p.m. for a gathering with bubbling champagne at 6 p.m. on Friday and showing the movie The Heart is an Organ.
Of course.
At 6:30.
How did you develop and nurture the idea for a marathon festival honoring Bach?
Well, in a world of uncertainty that's constantly changing, Bach is like a rudder. It's one thing that remains the same, and I knew that it would appeal to many people, musicians and audiences alike.
Now, Albinus, your passion for the organ is evident in your playing. What is it that calls you to the instrument and to the music of Bach?
My understanding of Bach is always developing. I constantly see different things in it. It's a continuing exploration.
And the organ, what draws you to it?
The organ has been my family tradition for many generations. It was something that I was just born into.
And Manon, your passion comes through in organizing this huge event. How do you do it?
It's incredible this year how many people have called me and say, I want to play at Bach on the Clock. What can I do? And then we get into a whole story of what they want to do, how they came about to know about it. And most of the time, they came themselves the year before. And then they got hooked, if I may say. This year, I've been on the phone this last week, just almost nonstop. I love people. They are my instrument. They are my organ. And the fact that they were inspired by Albinus, it's my joy. It becomes a mission to help them to shine at a particular time, at a particular period of the day, at Bach on the Clock.
What are the highlights this year? Who's performing?
The LPO musician will play some beautiful quartet, Haydn and Bach, and then we move on to Hélène Gillette. Then during the day, we will have the trombone choir, various choir. Lula Elsie is going to come with her dancer to do excerpts of It's All About New Orleans. And that is going to be a tremendous gift to us. And then it follows with Delphios Marsalis, Uptown Jazz Orchestra. Then we will have the flamenco dancer, Micaela Fiesta Flamenca. We will get the Loyola String Orchestra, directed by Jean Montez. And this time, it'll be some music from César Franck. I cannot name everybody, but there'll be quite a few dancers. And let's not forget this opening that we have never done. Children and parents coming to dance to the Four Seasons.
So what is the relationship of the various musical styles offered to the music of Bach? You've got classical, you've got gospel, you've got jazz. How does it all relate?
Well, for example, I know that our R&B pianist of New Orleans, James Booker, was familiar with the classics. And I know the Rolling Stones are coming into town, and I bet Keith Richards and Mr. Jagger have heard of Bach also. It's something that is a common denominator.
So tell us, what are you going to perform?
I'm going to play some blues. I've been doing a lot of rock and roll classics, Led Zeppelin. I've played a lot of Rolling Stones this past year. Phenomenal music. It never ceases to amaze me. I thought there's a Rameau on the harpsichord. The grand finale is the Bach Staccato and Fugue, which I know we all know it. It's always so much in it that I always look forward to it. At the moment, what I like to do is play a short segment of the aria from the Magnificat, the soprano of Bach, that's going to segue into the beginning of Any Time at All by the Beatles. I find that shows the relationship between the two pieces, not just in tonality, but in mood. It's something I've been experimenting with, and it's worked really well for me. I hope it works for everybody else, too. Naturally, Bach's original version has so much complexity, as does the Beatle original, but it shows the inspiration, the initial inspiration is one of profound simplicity and depth.
It's amazing to me how you thought to put the two together.
It is amazing. As one of the preachers at Trinity said, it's all grace.
Amen. Bach Around the Clock, co-founders Albinus and Renan Presgentis, thank you for sharing this gift of music.
Merci beaucoup, Diane.
Bach Around the Clock takes place at Trinity Episcopal Church, 1329 Jackson Avenue, beginning Friday, March 29th at 7 p.m., running nonstop until midnight Saturday, March 30th. Admission free. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.